Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 19, The Lord Begs Charity from Bali Maharaj, Text 35. Nishtam te narake manye. Yaparatu pratishrutam. Pratishrutasya yonishi nisha. Pratipada itum bhavan. I'm just going to read the translation because there's no purport. You will certainly be unable to fulfill your promise, and I think that because of this inability, your eternal residence will be in hell. Ooh. Sounds pretty bad. Learned scholars do not praise that charity which endangers one's own livelihood. Charity, sacrifice, austerity, and fruitive activities are possible for one who is competent to earn his livelihood properly. They are not possible for one who cannot maintain himself. Text 37. Therefore, one who is in full knowledge should divide his accumulated wealth in five parts. For religion, for reputation, for opulence, for sense gratification, and for the maintenance of his family members. Such a person is happy in this world and in the next. So for those who are materialists, you can quote from Srimad Bhagavatam and use Sukracharya as your authority for why, how you should enjoy in this material world. It says in the bottom, just following the Bhagavatam, that's what they told me to do. I am strict followers of the Bhagavatam, especially Shukracharya. He's my acharya. He's an acharya after all. Acharya. Mahajano yena sapasada vanta. Purport. The Shastras enjoin that if one has money, one should divide all that he has accumulated into five divisions. One part for religion, one part for reputation, one part for opulence, and one part for sense gratification, and one part to maintain the members of his family. At the present, however, because people are bereft of all knowledge, they spend all their money for the satisfaction of their family. Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī taught us by his own example, by using 50% of his accumulated wealth for Krishna, 25% of his own self, for his own self, and 25% for the members of his family. One's main purpose should be to advance in Krishna consciousness. This will include dharma, artha, and kama. However, because one's family members expect some profit, one should also satisfy them by giving them a portion one's accumulated wealth. This is a shastric injunction. Namo Vishnu Vraya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutaya Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasatun Deve Gauravani Vicharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskadhyade Satarane. As I have mentioned before, Nigama Kaputuro Galitam Phalam Sukamukha Dravya Samyutam Vibhata Bhagavatam, Amalam Bhagavatam, Amalam. Mohur Mohu, Muka, Bhuvika Bhavikaha. Nigama Kapatura Galitam Balam. So that this Vedic literature is the desire tree. Nigama. Nigama means the Vedic literature. Nigama Kapa, Kapatura, the desire tree. So, Srimad Bhagavatam, all the Vedic literatures, they're there to give us what we want. And why is that? Because everyone is determined to get something in the material world, and it's not exactly always Krishna. Although Krishna is the source of everything, and one can't get anything unless he gets it from Krishna. I mean, there's no possibility of getting anything unless Krishna agrees. It's not that we can make a deal with some demigod, and the demigod, Krishna says, no, I'm against, and the demigod says, well, I made the deal, sorry. Now, Krishna may follow his devotee, whatever the devotee promises, kontiya pradijani hi name bhakti pranasheti, but that's the devotee. Krishna is only obliged to follow the devotee, not some ordinary person. Therefore, offering people as Rikasura, Rikasura was a demon, and he wanted some benediction. Everyone wants a benediction, but he wanted a special benediction. So he met Narada Muni. Obviously, he was a special demon, because we don't walk down the street here and meet Narada Muni regularly. Oh, Narada Muni, you're also going to the park. How good. I always had a few questions to ask you, you know. So obviously he was an ordinary demon because he actually had Narada Muni's association. Still he asked Narada Muni, my dear Narada Muni, who should I ask for my benediction? So Narada Muni knew that this is a demon. And whatever benediction he probably wants to ask for is going to be very harmful for himself and everyone else. And if he goes to Vishnu, Vishnu will say, get lost. And therefore he'll become even more of a demon. I went to Vishnu, I made a request, and he said, get lost. Narada Muni misled me. Vishnu misled me. They're all bad. I'm the only one good around here. And he didn't want him to go to Brahma because Brahma sometimes hesitates also. Haranyakashipu asked Brahma, my dear Brahma, please give me the benediction that I can live forever. And Brahma said, sorry, I can't live forever myself. How can I give you that benediction? And then he gave him 100 benedictions and they all failed. They didn't cover the insurance policy. He wound up with an acute stomach problem in spite of all the benedictions. So he prayed to, he said, why don't you ask Lord Shiva? Lord Shiva is Ashutosh. He gives whatever, very easily whatever people ask for because he wants to get rid of them. He doesn't want to be bothered by them. And he also gives, so he's Asatosh, he's, if he's pleased, if you do something for him, then he'll easily give you some benediction. So Rikasura went to the, I forget where he went to, in the Himalayas. And there he went through some austerity, cutting his flesh from his body. Could you imagine, what part of your body would you cut the flesh from? Think about it. I just cut some of my toenails and throw it into the fire. Hopefully it counts. But imagine cutting flesh from your body. Have to eat a little extra for a few weeks before you start the sacrifice. And he did that, and then Lord Shiva was going to cut his head off, own head off, and throw it into the fire. Swaha. But Lord Shiva appeared from the fire and stopped him from such a suicidal act, and then cured his wounds, and then he gave him a benediction. And Vrikasura said, whosoever head I touch immediately will crack into thousands of pieces. And the first person he wanted to experiment was with Lord Shiva. Let me touch your head, see if it works. Then I can steal your wife Parvati. Lord Shiva fled. Vrikasura chased after him. And ultimately Lord Vishnu, in the form of a brahmachari, solved the problem and had Vrikasura touch his own head, which broke into 1,000 pieces. So everyone is looking for some kind of benediction, and Vishnu, he doesn't give benedictions so easily, but others may give benedictions much more easily, but without Vishnu's sanction, that no one gets anything. But if you ask Vishnu directly, he may not give someone what they want. And if you ask Vishnu's devotee, it's more likely you'll get it, but it probably won't be very helpful in the long run. And here are the perspective given in this particular verse in the Vedic literature, Nigama Kalpataroa Galitam Palam, is the position of a person in the material world who wants to be happy in the material world and wants some guidance how to do it. So Krishna is not opposed to that. He doesn't say, well, you don't want my kingdom, you don't want me, forget it. Well, you suffer here forever. You want some benediction, I benedict that you'll go to hell. Read the Vedic literature. You don't want Krishna, go to hell. Oh, wait a second, I got the wrong book. No, the Vedic literature wants to encourage us to follow his instructions wherever we are, to make at least a little bit of step upwards. And that way, if we get a little step upwards following the Vedic literature, then we develop some faith in the Vedic literature. And it's the development of faith that is necessary to ultimately come to Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is the development of faith ultimately in Krishna and in Krishna's words. Real faith is faith in Krishna consciousness, but if we get a little less out of, in Maya, that means we're a little bit closer to Krishna also. Therefore, the Vedic literature also encourages to seek Krishna in some ways, either directly or indirectly. Srimad Bhagavatam keeps on saying, if you read this chapter, then you'll defeat all your enemies. So you read it again and again and again and kept on checking the internet and find out if your enemy's still around. Got to read it one more time. Ah, he's gone. All right. This is a good book. Oh, you'll become rich or famous. You'll get a kingdom. Keep on reading it. Well, I'm out of a job. I got to get something, you know. This is the 15th time I read it. Where's my kingdom? Something's not working. I got the wrong chapter. But there's some encouragement that we can make some, get our material desires fulfilled, and that way one develops some faith in the process of Krishna consciousness, that, you know, this, it's actually working. If Krishna consciousness is not practical, doesn't actually give us something, then we'll just give it up. Prabhupada said people don't go to church anymore because they figure, why go to church? I'm praying for my daily bread. I can just go to the bank and get a loan and I can get so much bread. So instead of going to church, my dear Lord, please give me my daily bread. They go to the bank and say, oh, my dear manager of the bank, please give me a loan. So they're begging someone, but they're begging the bank manager instead of Krishna so they can get bread. And if the bank manager gives the loan to get bread, then they think, well, the manager's better than Krishna. Why should I go to church? I can just go to the bank, and they can give me another credit card, and I can get more bread. Or in the Vedic culture, one goes to the Brahmin priest and asks the Brahmin priest, my dear Brahmin priest, can you do a sacrifice for me? Because I need some benediction. I need some health, or I need some wealth, or I need a wife or a husband. I need something. So please help me. And the Brahmin priest does some sacrifice. And because the Brahmin priests were actually trained so that their words actually had some effect. It wasn't just, you know, our sacrifice, you know, swaha. And at the end of the sacrifice, all we have is burnt grains. Nothing else has happened. And we take it outside so the pigeons can get the results of the sacrifice. Of course, the actual sacrifice is the chanting of the mantras. It's not useless. But because we're chanting the Shingadeva's mantra or Krishna's mantra over and over again, that's the real effect, is chanting the mantra. Throwing the grains into the sacrifice is a symbol, you know, trying to get us to get into the mood of surrender. At least the grains on our plate. These grains, I don't know, I'm hungry. I don't know if I can throw them in today. I think I'll take them outside and eat them. No, they're usually uncooked just so we don't eat them. We don't get the wrong idea. I cook these things, you know, get some bread, I'm hungry. No, we throw them in, and that's the extent of our detachment. Here, Krishna, at least I can give you some uncooked grains. I'm pretty generous today. Or Agni. But the idea is that if they perform the sacrifice, the Brahmin priests, and they actually learn how to chant the mantras, like for instance when the Prithu Maharaj was doing the sacrifice, Ashwamedha sacrifice, to become the ruler of the universe practically, at least the Bhumandala, the earth planet. Then Indra became jealous and tried to stop the sacrifice. And the horse for the Ashwamedha sacrifice, he kept on stealing. So finally, at the end of a long time, Prithu Maharaj became angry at Indra, decided let Indra be the offering to the sacrifice. Let Indra, throw Indra into the sacrifice and let him get burnt up. And the Brahmin priest was so powerful that by chanting certain mantras, actually Indra started to fall into the sacrifice before Vishnu came and stopped it. It's hard to get a good Indra in the universe. So, good help is hard to get nowadays. So Vishnu didn't want Indra to get thrown into the sacrifice. Then he would have had to look around for another Indra, which is hard, difficult. But that's how powerful the priests were, that by their chanting a mantra, even the ruler of the universe, Indra, could be thrown into the sacrifice. Therefore, even the demigods had to respect the Brahmins. Otherwise, even they could get cursed. Indra was cursed by Gautama Muni, and therefore now, at least, he has eyes all over his body. So imagine when Indra gets older and his eyes start failing him, how many, I guess they'll get a lot of contact lenses or something. Otherwise, how is he going to put on all those glasses? So he got cursed by a Brahmin, Gautama, and he had to suffer the results of it. Therefore, the Brahmin priests were quite powerful, and their benedictions, their sacrifices, their chanting of mantras actually resulted in a result. They actually got the benediction they were looking for. And then when people saw that, then they developed faith in the Brahmin priests, they developed faith in the Vedic literature, they developed faith in some other power other than some material, what they were perceiving with their materialistic vision. There were some other forces in control of the universe than what they could directly perceive. And therefore after some time they became a little curious, and people start to read the Vedic literature. They think, wow, this manual works, what else is there, you know? Maybe I can get my own planet or something. Is that Brahmin priests can give me that? So they start to read the Vedic literature. And indeed they found out that if you perform even more elaborate sacrifices, you could go to the heavenly planets. So going to the heavenly planets has the idea that there's something, another life. Because they weren't going to generally go in this lifetime with this body. They were going to go in another body, in their spirit, in another body. Well, I should say the spirit soul was going to get another body in the heavenly planets. So then they developed some faith in reincarnation, the transmigration of the self, that there is possible to actually get a better material existence. And they perform those sacrifices. And those in the heavenly planets, or those who had more faith, they read the Upanishads, talked about merging Brahman, becoming one with God. He lived forever in the Brahman effulgence, in complete happiness. They became interested in doing the austerities necessary for that, or meditating on Paramatma. So the Vedic literature also takes one gradually, step by step, from one stage of faith to the gross of elements of material existence, to the subtler elements of material existence. Finally, towards liberation. And when one becomes liberated, one realizes I'm eternal, and the Vedic literature has revealed all this to me, and following the process of sacrifice, then one is eligible to get into the idea of Srimad Bhagavatam and the devotional literatures, Ishupanishad and other literatures, which describe the personality of Godhead and our relationship with Him. So now we're starting, we don't know anything about karma kanda. We don't perform sacrifice, or jnana kanda, or yoga. Yoga nowadays means to try to sit someplace and, you know, meditate. On what? No one knows really what you're meditating on. How is my cat doing, you know? Did I feed the cat? Maybe I should go home, but I'm meditating. Oh my God, the cat's going to be angry when I get back. So no one knows what one is meditating on. Just meditating. Everyone's meditating, usually on the objects of the senses, and that's called, but that doesn't count. It's not official. But when you sit in a certain posture, put your fingers together, no matter what you're doing, you're meditating on something. But ultimately, when one has faith that the objective of life is to go back to the spiritual world, to become conscious of Krishna, then one's desires change. But as long as one is in the material world, seeking after material happiness, then the Vedic literatures can help one, even better than any kind of materialistic philosophy or science, whatever. Just as I pointed out, nowadays they're promising happiness through technology. They're promising happiness through industrialization. But this is not happiness at all. It's just creating misery. Contaminated air, contaminated water, contaminated food, contaminated ether. Everything is contaminated. Everything is disturbing. Everything is unhealthy. Everything is unproductive. This so-called advancement through technology and industrialization is just a failure. On the other hand, the Vedic literature doesn't tell you that if you chant Hare Krishna, then you'll get a new computer. I kept on chanting. I came into my room, and wow, an actual Apple computer, my God. Maybe I go back. What else can I get? No, these things can be utilized in Krishna service, but that's not the result of Krishna consciousness, nor is the computer going to be utilized to advance industrialization and technology. It's going to be utilized to help us chant Hare Krishna and become conscious of Krishna. But in lieu of that, still here Shukracharya is offering some advice that some, our money should be utilized in different ways. For instance, some of it for our family, some of it for our personal maintenance, some of it for our reputation, some of it for our opulence. So it should be divided up properly for religion. And Srila Rupa Goswami suggests that some of it should be utilized for the family, some of it to spread Krishna consciousness. There he has the majority of it for spreading Krishna consciousness, and some for the family and for some personal maintenance. But that's the higher realm. When one is actually a devotee or trying to become a devotee, but when one is not a devotee, then some idea of the Vedic, of how to live in this material world and actually make some progress in some way or another, so that one can develop faith in the Vedic literature and faith that there's something more in life than just endlessly and needlessly and without any limited, any limit, gratify the senses, like animal life. So it leads to Vedic literature as an attempt to bring one to the human form of life, and only in the human form of life can we actually begin to understand about liberation and the process of achieving it and take it seriously. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments?
Hare Krishna, I was wondering, these days, if we, I don't know, meet or a Brahmana who is somehow like Shukracharya, what should we do?
If you find a Brahmana like Shukracharya?
Yeah, and give us some, I don't know, not so okay instructions. What should we do?
Well, if you actually could find a Brahmana like Shukracharya, you find a materialistic Brahmin, you mean, what should you do? Ask him to chant Hare Krishna. What can you do? What do you want? You mean in terms of getting a benediction from them? What can you do with it? You know, offer a Brahmin like Shukracharya, you should offer respect. But, you know, unless they're a devotee, then I would avoid their association. Unless they're, I mean, a devotee. Shukracharya is actually kind of a devotee also. But I wouldn't take any, if you're supposed to give something, do some service for Krishna, and such a Brahmana says, don't do the service of Krishna, I think you should run away from him.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes. So, Doman is asking about attachment to the family and the duties towards family. Where is the line and when is the line that you make a line?
Well, give me a piece of paper, I'll make a line. I'm not so sure. Everything is so relative. It's not so easy to discern. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for instance, he was 24 years old, he left the family, his young wife and his old mother, he just left them for the sake of higher purpose. But we're not on the level of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And therefore, if we leave our family like that, we'll probably worry about them. So we have to be aware of what our level of advancement is and act accordingly. But we shouldn't associate, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Jura, what is it? I have to go through all the verses to come to it. Amadi dvama dambi dvama hingsa shanti arjuvam acharya pasanam socham stiriam atma vinigraha indriyarte shu vrayuragyam anahankara evacha janma mriti duravyadi dukha dosha nudarshanam asaktir anabishvanga putra dara grihadi shu. Detachment from wife, children, home, and the rest. So, detachment from them doesn't mean that we're neglectful of them, or that we have no affection for them. That's natural in the material world. But if it becomes unfavorable, that relationship, then it should be given up. But we should realize, Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, that in this material world there's no absolute happiness, nor is there any absolute distress. But still, if our relation with the family is the cause of our downfall, we should not associate with a family which is gonna cause our destruction. That won't help them and it won't help us either. In fact, our advancement actually determines something about our family's future. If we advance in Krishna consciousness, then our family will be helped. And if we fall down, then neither they can help us, nor we can help them. Prahlad Maharaj asked for benediction for his father, Hiranyakashipu, who was the biggest demon. But still, by being the father of Prahlad Maharaj, he was liberated. In 20 generations, it depends how, 8 generations or 20 generations of Prahlad Maharaj's family, before and after became liberated, or will become liberated, by Prahlad Maharaj's association in the family as a great devotee.
There is also a question from Bhakti Yoga Tilburg. Hare Krishna Maharaj, question. There is a lot of information about how to get back to Krishna in different ways and levels. How to see this? Do we have to go through all of this, or do we have to choose? For instance, Dhyana Yoga in Bhagavad Gita, is that a phase or a choice?
No, everyone needs knowledge. Knowledge is Krishna, ultimately. Everyone has to do something, but it should be done for Krishna. Everyone has to know something, everyone has consciousness, but we should develop consciousness of Krishna by hearing about Krishna. So that's Jnani, Karma Yoga Prabhupada says, when one knows that the goal of is Krishna, when one is attached to the results of his work, that's called Karma Yoga. When one knows that the goal is Krishna, but one takes pleasure in mental speculation, to understand Krishna, that's called Jnani Yoga. And one knows that the goal is Krishna and seeks Krishna completely in devotional service and Krishna consciousness, that's called Bhakti Yoga. So Jnani Yoga, Karma Yoga, Astanga, they're all part of Krishna consciousness. And if we practice Krishna consciousness, then automatically Karma Yoga and Jnani Yoga and Astanga Yoga will all be fulfilled. Krishna. Kuala Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Kijaya.